You've seen our research on social media. Now, join us as we dive deeper into the public health topics of our time, featuring new studies and findings generated by our faculty and researchers committed to advancing health equity. From the Department of Population and Public Health Sciences at Keck School of Medicine of USC, this is Preventive Pros, the podcast.
I am Mariana Stern, and I'm a professor in Population and Public Health Sciences, and I'm also the director of the Master Program in Applied Biostatistics and Epidemiology, and I also serve as the Associate Director for Population Science at the Norris Comprehensive Cancer Center. I'm a cancer epidemiologist. I'm originally trained as a biologist, and I then did my PhD in cancer biology, and then I got postdoctoral training in epidemiology. So today I'm going to be talking about the COGENES training program. And COGENES stands for Community Genetic Navigation Specialist. And this is a training program that we launched with my colleague, Dr. Vasconde Garbanati, who's also a professor in the department. And this is a program that was funded through our COPEC Center, which is the Center for Patient Engagement in Cancer Characterization Studies, which is a center that was funded by the Cancer Moonshot. And we launched this center a couple of years ago. The center is led by Dr. Hans-Josef Lenz, who's a medical oncologist, and Dr. John Carpten, who is currently the director of the City of Hope Cancer Center. And within that center, I lead one of the units, which is the patient engagement unit, and Dr. Vasconde Garbanati leads the engagement optimization unit. So we joined forces to develop this novel training program. And the goal of the program is to train community advocates, community educators who are Hispanic or Latinx, and to give them training on colorectal cancer prevention, genetic testing, genomic testing, and the importance of community members participating in cancer research. Because we recognize that we have a gap in the number of Hispanic and Latinx patients who participate in cancer research. And we recognize that part of the reason for that gap is that there's lack of knowledge in the community about the importance of participating in research and basic knowledge about colorectal cancer, cancer genetics, cancer genomics, and why those are important for patient care. So we thought that a great way to address that gap would be to train people in the community who could partner with us and serve as liaisons in the community to educate the community and help them navigate to participate in studies. And if a member of the community gets diagnosed with colorectal cancer, then to be empowered and to know about the importance of these tests for their care. Another important component is that we know that there's families who have genetic mutations that increase the risk of developing cancer. So we also wanted to raise awareness about that so that those who may have several members in their family who have had cancer, maybe they are prompted to seek genetic counseling, maybe get tested. And hopefully that way we can raise awareness and make sure that everyone has a chance to detect their cancer as early as possible. The reason that why we focus on colorectal cancer is, number one, colorectal cancer is the third most common cancer in the U.S. However, among Hispanic communities, it's actually the second most common cancer among males. The incidence of colorectal cancer among Hispanic communities is actually lower than among non-Hispanic white communities or Black communities. However, the burden of cancer is higher. So a greater percent of cancer patients who are Hispanic are going to have colorectal cancer compared to other racial ethnic groups. So even though the incidence is low, the burden is higher. And the fact that the cancer incidence has historically been lower than among white or Black populations is, I think, part of the reason why we have this disparity of knowledge for colorectal cancer in Hispanic populations, because it was perceived that among this population, this cancer is not such a big concern as it is among Black or white populations where the incidence is higher. However, as I mentioned, the cancer burden is higher in this population. And there are many questions that we need to address. Other issues of other disparities that we observe in this community are that patients tend to be diagnosed with a more advanced stage, which is telling us that likely fewer patients are benefiting from cancer screening or early detection. We also know that colorectal cancer screening utilization in this population is lower compared to other communities like white or black communities. So we have an opportunity to improve upon that and hopefully shift the stage of diagnosis to an earlier stage. And the other interesting observation that we are seeing and others have seen is that in the Hispanic community, we tend to see a greater proportion of earlier age diagnosis. So we see a lot more younger people being diagnosed with colorectal cancer compared to what you see among white or black communities. There is a national trend for early age diagnosis in colorectal cancer. We are seeing a little bit of an epidemic, actually, of young people being diagnosed with colorectal cancer. So that's true for all racial ethnic groups. But among Hispanic communities, we tend to see a greater proportion of these young age diagnoses. So we want to understand why that is happening. So the current recommendations for screening, historically, screening has been recommended for people who are 50 years old or older. But given this trend of younger diagnosis, the current recommendation is to start screening a little earlier, maybe when you're 45 or 48 years old. That said, I think because we're seeing this increasing trend of younger age diagnosis, I think it's important to raise awareness about paying attention to symptoms that might be compatible with colorectal cancer, such as constipation or abdominal pain, abnormal bleeding, right? Anytime that we see bleeding, that's always should be a call for attention. And the other important aspect is to pay attention to our family members, to actually ask questions about our family members, if they have cancer, what kind of cancer, or what age they have cancer. And maybe to mention these things when we have our annual checkups with our doctors, to mention that our family history mentioned these abnormal symptoms, because sometimes putting it all together, they can kind of be a call for attention and maybe a recommendation to get screened, even if the person is younger than 45. So the Co-Genes program is designed to be a train-the-trainer program. And this is something that we are very excited about. So what we did is we identified community health educators and we provided them with pretty intensive training on colorectal cancer, including topics like colorectal cancer prevention, basic demographics about colorectal cancer, basic concepts of genetics, like what is genetics, what are, you know, rules of genetic transmission, what are mutations, and then we provide knowledge about genetic testing, genetic counseling, tumor testing, what are those data used for, and why do they benefit patients, and then basic concepts about patient navigation and patient care. So the way that we pick our navigators was through various sources. So one of them are partnerships that we have with community health educator organizations. So our colleague, Dr. Vasconde Garbanati, has been working with many organizations for many, many years who specialize in providing training and affiliation to community health educators such as Vision and Compromiso and many others. We also leverage another resource that we have, which is a registry of people in the community who are interested in participating in research. And many of these people are community health educators. So we launched this registry as part of our Care 2 Health Equity Center, which is a center that I co-direct with Dr. Shanita Hughes-Halbert here at USC, and Dr. Vasconde Garbanati is also part of our center. So we launched this registry so that we could get a roster of people from the community who are interested in participating in cancer research studies. So then we advertised our study through that registry, and we actually engaged a few people that had participated in that registry and wanted to be part of our study. So the design of our study was that we trained 12 community health educators This was a three-week program where we met a couple of times per week for about 6 hours. We provided them training, and the training consisted of lectures and hands-on activities. And we had multiple experts who came to talk with the trainees. So we had genetic counselors, we had medical oncologists, and of course, you know, Dr. Vasconde Garbanati and I also gave some of the lectures. And after they completed the training, we asked each of these community health educators that each of them had to train up to three additional people. And we didn't just send them blindly to do this. We provided them with all the materials. We gave them the curriculum. We gave them the presentations, the, you know, printed materials. We gave them PowerPoint slides. We really provided them with everything they could need to host these training sessions and to train these educators. And many of them, one beautiful thing that happened is that many of them actually decided to pool efforts and to work together. So we had a few of our educators that got together and they all invited their trainees, and they had these larger sessions where they would all take turns providing the training, and they would train instead of each training three, they kind of put together, work together, and they train maybe 10 or 12 people at a time, which was really beautiful to see. We have an amazing staff of people in our team who are all community health educators themselves, and they were actively involved helping our trainees. So they would attend the sessions to observe, they would help them with any kind of logistics that they needed, they helped providing materials for the trainees. So now that we have completed this first round of training, we have trained a total of 36 community health educators who are now actively working in the community, disseminating all this knowledge. So in addition to putting together this curriculum for training, we also develop a manual that is really meant to be for the community. And this manual has a lot of infographics and very easy to follow information. And it sort of summarizes all the key messages that we want the community to receive. So we provided instruction to our trainees on how to use this manual in the community. And we actually tested the manual with community members. We had a series of focus groups where we tested the manual to make sure that it was easy to follow, that it really answered all the questions that our community may have, and that it was, you know, that the concepts were clear, that that the images were pleasing, that they connected with the community. We had very good responses from our focus groups, and we got a lot of feedback that we incorporated in our manual. And then we also had our community health educators rate our manual. So we use a rating scale that Dr. Vasconde Garbanati developed for other studies that she's done. And we formally rated our and evaluated our manual with our community health educators so that we could really improve it and make it suitable for our community. So right now, our community health educators are working in the community, disseminating this manual, going to health fairs and other events and talking about colorectal cancer and disseminating these materials in the community. One additional activity that we included with our training to continue fostering this sense of community among our community health educators is that we offer them monthly office hours. So once a month, we host on Zoom a session where members of our team get together, and we invite our community health educators to come on the Zoom and basically bring their questions, their stories, their concerns. So that really has fostered a great sense of community building, because they kind of like share with each other what has worked, what hasn't worked. And we get to hear some of the questions that come up from the community. So we're in the process of compiling a lot of this information that we're getting from the community. So I still don't have a comprehensive sense of what are all the concerns, but many things that we hear from them, from our community members, are questions about what to do if they find, for example, that they have a lot of cancer in their families. Where do they go? What can they do about that? Many of them have questions, you know, like they have certain symptoms. Does that mean that I may have colorectal cancer? And if so, what do I do? So when we are confronted with questions like that, we try to refer them to the resources that we're providing them. So we put together a lot of resources of where can they go for genetic testing? Where can they go for genetic counseling? Where could they go to get screened for colorectal cancer? So we try to help our navigators point the community members in the right direction. But I think I would say the bottom line is that we hear a lot of concern from the community about this particular cancer, because it's a pretty frequent cancer. It's something that you hear a lot about in the community. So there's a real desire to do something about it, right? And but sometimes there's the lack of knowledge of where to go or what to do, or whether there even are they have access to the kind of testing. So a lot of people don't even know that they may have access to colorectal cancer screening, for example. So I think that's something that we're working with our community health educators to try to empower the community to take advantage of the resources that are available to them. I think the main thing that I have learned so far in doing this kind of work is that it's so important to provide materials and education to the communities in a way that is friendly to them and that takes into account the concerns that they have. I think part of the reason why we see such a big disparity in participation of Hispanic community members or Hispanic patients in cancer research is because they haven't been approached in a way that is friendly to them. Just the fact that often patients are approached in English. And we know that here in LA, many of our Hispanic community members or patients are going to be monolingual Spanish speakers. So just that simple act of approaching them and being able to speak Spanish or provide materials in Spanish, that can go a long way in engaging that patient and providing that patient the vital information that they need. The other important concept is that we have to recognize that sometimes the communities that we're trying to engage, in our case, the communities in East LA who are Hispanic, they may not only not speak English, but also their level of literacy might be very low. So we can't approach them with documents that have very complicated words that they may not know what they mean. It doesn't mean they cannot understand them, but somebody has to take just a minute to explain what it means. And once you explain that, they will understand. So I think the main thing that I've learned is that if you approach patients with respect and appreciating where they're coming from and providing them materials that are at the right level and in the right language, and that can make a huge impact in their engagement and in their ability to feel empowered to make decisions about their care. Another important thing to keep in mind is that you know, all cultures, all communities have their own cultural values and different ways in which we do things. And I'm originally from Latin America, so I grew up in Latin America, so I'm very familiar with the way that things tend to be done in Latin American countries and the way that we tend to interact with physicians, for example. So one thing that is important to keep in mind is that sometimes in the Hispanic community, there's historically certain relationship with physicians where physicians are perceived as the ultimate authority, and whatever a physician says, then the patient has to do, because often in Latin American countries, that's the way that physicians engage with their patients. And this idea that a patient may actually take control of the treatment or make decisions, it's really not that common. So one of the things that we're trying to work with our communities is this idea that it's okay to ask questions to your doctor, that your doctor will welcome those questions, that a patient has a say in their care, that it doesn't have to be top down, right? So, for example, one of the things that we do with our patients in our COPEX center is that we provide them with the results of their tests, we give them back the results, and we also give them educational materials that explain what the results mean. And we also give them a page that has suggested questions that they can ask their doctor about their results, because we want to empower them so that they feel that it's okay to ask questions. They don't have to just sit there and wait for the doctor to decide what's going to happen to them. They can question the decisions and they can say, well, do I really need that treatment or could there be another treatment for me? But these are things that, particularly for older Hispanic members of the community, these are things that don't come natural to them because they're used to the way that things were done maybe in their home countries, which is the way that I grew up, where you don't question your doctor. Your doctor tells you what to do and you just do it. And we're trying to change that paradigm by empowering our patients with knowledge and with tools and making them feel, yes, you can ask questions and you can, ask why is this happening to me and why do I need to do this? Is this the only option? I think what makes me most proud about the work that we've been doing with the COGENES program and with our COPEX Center, it's really seeing the power of providing patients and community members with knowledge. I think for us who are in academia and who've been, you know, had long careers studying for so many years, we take for granted how powerful it is to have understanding of what things mean. You read any kind of brochure that talks about genetics and you know what that means. And we take that for granted. But for a community member who's never heard about those things, who doesn't know what that means, it can be overwhelming, particularly for a cancer patient who's already overwhelmed by receiving a diagnosis and having to navigate all the horrible treatments that cancer patients have to go through, which are amazing because they say they can save lives, but they're pretty harsh and devastating. And on top of that, to not understand basic things that doctors are talking to you about or that you're reading, it must give them a sense of helplessness. So for me, seeing community members understanding all these things that we take for granted, right? What is a genetic mutation and why do we need to know about them? And what can you do with that information? Seeing that aha moment in their eyes when you explain this and they're like, oh, now I see why that happened to so-and-so. And now I understand why this or that. That to me is so rewarding. And then listening to their experiences. There's nothing that I like most than when we have our meetings with our community advisory board members who advise us in everything we do, or even during our training and just listening to the stories of the impact that cancer have in their communities and the kind of things they go through. It's just empowering to feel that we have this privilege of being able to partner with them and learn from them and give back all this knowledge to them so that they can then empower their communities and feel themselves empowered if they're cancer patients. If you want to learn more about the work that we're doing, you can visit our COPEC website, which is USCCOPEC with two C's at the end, .org. And within that website, we have a page dedicated to our COGENES program, and we have our colorectal cancer manual that is available for anybody to download. Or you can reach out to us if you want to get a printed copy sent to you. So please visit our website and learn more about what we do.
Preventive Pros, the podcast, is produced by the Department of Population and Public Health Sciences at Keck School of Medicine of USC. To learn more about any of our episodes, or to subscribe to our monthly Preventive Dose newsletter featuring the latest in public health research and news, visit pphs.usc.edu/podcast. Thank you for listening.